This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday, May 29th. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today. Today we actually have a serious topic that we're going to discuss. I have a guest who has written a book, has written a story, her story. And her story is inspiring women to stand up. Inspiring women to survive, inspiring women to know what to do. It's a heavy topic, and that's why I have Erin Green with me to assist me as I navigate speaking to my guests. I'm delighted to see her strength. I am happy to hear her story of survival. I'm happy to hear how she is now committed to helping other victims. I want to commend her. I want to say, tell her thank you. I want to herald her for this period now to let her know that I appreciate you for what you're doing, coming on air to tell your story. Right? As a guest today, I have the author, right? Miss Antoinette Brown. The name of the book that she wrote is Rape, A Survivor's Compelling Testimony. I want to know about the author herself, her general bio of who she is. Then I am going to delve in terms of the book, because a number of people have been asking for this book. This book is now a resource for victims and for the general audience who know victims and say, hey, I need this book to understand what I can do to assist. And in order to reach more people, to have Miss Brown help more people, we have made space for her to tell her story of survival and to share with the listening audience what we can do to help and what victims, as a resource, can come in and get access to resources on what they can do. So allow me to introduce, producer, make sure her mic is on for me. Introduce yourself formally for me, Ms. Brown.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nuri and Ms. Green. I am so happy to be here this morning, and I want to share my story as well as let you know about the event that is going to be coming, that's happening on Saturday. So I will share some of that at the end as well. And like you said, my name is Antoinette Brown, and I'm a barefoot girl from South Andros. I grew up on the quaint, in a quaint community called the Bluff on South Andros. And I grew up there, been there until I was 16 years old. Then I came up to Nassau And I was a Marine in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. And after the rape occurred, I had to move from there, and I joined the regular public service. And so I am a wonderful person. I am stern, but I'm quite loving.
The name of the book is Raped, A Survivor's Compelling Testimony. And it gives detail on what happened to you and which would happen afterwards, right? And for the people who plan to purchase the book, can I have a narrative, if you can, of what happened to you?
Yes. First of all, let me say that I really wrote the book to give encouragement to those persons who have been through a similar experience as I have, those persons who have been traumatized, and they feel that their life is somewhat like hopeless. I want them to know that, no, your life is not hopeless. As long as you are alive, there is hope that you can get better. And it will take some time. It is a process, but you can get there. You can get there. And so what I speak about in the book, this book is not fictional. It is a real story about real people and a real event. And I will tell you how I battled fear, resentment, and anger, and how I overcame a feeling ashamed, and not wanting to see people and thinking what people are thinking about me. I will also tell you how I was forced to lean on God for his understanding and his wisdom, and how to get to the breakthrough that that equaled the depth of my breakdown. I will tell you in this book how I was plagued with suicide thoughts 24/7, and how I forgave myself and also forgave the perpetrator, and how I was able to move on and to write this story so that others can know that you have a living witness. You have someone who's been there and who can tell you that, yes, it is the worst experience that you will ever go through, mentally or physically, any kindly, but you can get out of it.
If I could, right. You know, in this conversation we'll be having collectively about marital rape, a lot of people join the discussion and say things like, well, I don't see any women stating that they were raped by their husband, right? Like, I don't see anyone talking about it. I don't believe it because I don't know any victims of rape or marital rape specifically. But visibility, survivors of rape, when they do make themselves visible, like you're saying, it's not to prove to, you know, opponents that it happened, but to be a beacon for other victims so that they can see that here's somebody that experienced what I experienced and they're still standing, right? And so I want to say that's, it's very important, and thank you for being a survivor, right, that can stand and say, hey, I survived and you could survive too.
Yes. Yes, and I also want to share that, you know, in this country, rape, the word, seemed to be a bad word.
And I hear you. And I find that there are Christian counsel who said, or have, and is uneasy with the word rape, especially in marriage, right? And asking for another word to be used. And I am asking you, why do you think the term rape seems to be a bad word, a dirty word for some people to say, hey, I can whisper that instead?
Yes, because in rape, from I was a child, you know, you would hear about these things, but it was always like kept quiet or it was swept under the rug. Like nobody wants to say it because of the negative connotation attached to the word. But I simply want to say that rape is rape. If you take I don't even want to say sex, because sex and rape are two different things. But if you forcibly go with someone against their will, it is rape. You can call it whatever you want to call it. You can try to water it down. You can try to say it's molestation. It is sexual crimes. It doesn't matter. Rape is rape. And we in this country think it is a taboo thing. We don't want to talk about it. But I want to bring awareness to this topic, that there are people who are suffering out there who has been raped. And they're suffering in silence because they don't have an outlet to go and speak to people about it. People, in terms of agencies, I know they have support groups and everything like that. But I mean, when they tell people that they were raped, a lot of people don't take them seriously. And that is not a good thing for a rape victim.
You mentioned that at one point in time, you went through the emotion of feeling ashamed.
Yes.
You did nothing wrong.
Yes.
I heard of a number of women who refuse to report such a crime because they feel ashamed. Like, what goes through a victim's mind that they just go quiet and say, I'm not even going to deal with it at all?
Well, I can tell you from my experience that a lot of women do not speak out because they don't get the support that they need. Like I mentioned just now, if you tell somebody that you were raped, depend on how they react to you, depend on their response to you, you will go into a shell and you will never come out, because you already believing that you are to blame. See, that's something that just goes on with rape victims. No one have to tell them that they are to blame. It's something that goes off in your head because of what society has let people think, that rape victims are to blame for being raped. But I want to say, It's such I want to say stupid, but it's an idea that should not even come up, that somebody yearns or wants to be raped. A rapist don't want to be raped. It's the most disgusting thing that you can ever do to a human. You take away everything that was sacred to them. And so when you do that, what do you expect will go on in the victim's head? They're thinking all kind, a myriad of thoughts come to your mind, and they are almost always negative. They are never positive. And no matter how many positive vibes people will speak to you, because of what's going on in your head, you probably won't get it right away.
And it's often the thoughts, right?
Yes.
Often not things that people have said to you, but like she said, we've socialized people to believe that the victim is ultimately to blame.
Yes.
If you weren't wearing that. If with the crows you were not found, you'd be home safe and sound. That's what we teach our children. If you wasn't there, if you were home where you're supposed to be, like a good girl, if you didn't have so many drinks, why you park your car there? Why you gone by yourself? Why are you going on a date with this Like, how else are we supposed to get to know each other?
Well, I can tell you, mm-hmm. I've never drank in my life. Not in my life. And I was in the safest place that I can be. In my home. I didn't go out there looking, or I was wearing provocative clothing, or I was flirting with somebody. I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. I was in the safest place that I can be, at 9:45 p.m. in my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And someone came looking for me.
Someone
I didn't know. It's a total stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Total stranger. But I'm saying, though, that society has got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They've got it wrong that the victim is the blame. You place all of this blame on a victim, but you allow the perpetrator to go free. And this is the reason why he can go out and commit this atrocious crime over and over again.
Ms. Brown, there has been some high-profile rape cases of late where the whole drama is being played out in the media, right? Where society is drawing lines or whose side they on. Right, who they believe publicly and saying it out loud, social media, right? As a survivor, what should society be doing or fording to rape victims, and especially when the trial case is going on, especially when, for lack of better words, what do you need? What type of resources or strengths and support you need from the wide audience?
Okay, first let me say this, and I mentioned it on Monday on the other radio show that I was on, that in a criminal justice system, a person will go before the court and they are proclaimed innocent until they are proven guilty by a judge or a jury. However, it is not the same for a rape victim. And you may ask why. I see you looking at me puzzled. And you may ask why. And I will tell you that when you are raped, people always, always, but 90% believe that you are to blame. And so you have to go and defend yourself. You have to prove to the court that you are not guilty, that you are not guilty, that you are innocent until proven guilty. In the court system, you are guilty until you're proven innocent. That's for a rape victim. And so it puts everything, it puts every onus on the victim to prove themselves. And I mean, how is that fair? I'm trying to figure out, how is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Another question I want to ask. I've been a victim of stalking, right? And I made a decision to be very public about it, particularly because the police weren't doing anything about it. I made my plight public. For a survivor of rape, there's always a gaze, right? The outside is always looking. In fact, we were talking recently, does the state have a duty of care to inform the public on the resolution on a matter when a young person has been reported missing? And in this instance, how much visibility, right? Like, where's that thin line between I want people to see my trauma because I want justice, and then where's that line where it just becomes too much, where there's too much outside gaze? And how, you know, do we, the public, need to moderate our behavior when it comes to matters of rape being covered in the public, right? I know we want eyes to see, to witness, right? This is what I went through. I didn't get justice, you know. I want people to witness that, but then how much is too much, and what do rape survivors need from the public in that aspect?
Okay, so let me say that first of all, society needs to become more empathetic to victims, because I believe, like I wrote in my book, that a dog can get more sympathy than a rape victim,
mm-hmm.
because people do not look at you the same. They will say that you are tainted, or you are damaged goods, and they call you all sort of names.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something you have to deal with as well. So the public just need to know. The public needs to know that they have to be more sympathetic towards the victim. And I'm not saying that the perpetrator he is not entitled to what he's entitled to. But what I'm saying too is that the victim is entitled to what they're entitled to. Mm-hmm. Every case is not cut and dried.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. Mm-hmm. Every case is not cut and dried like mine was, right? But you still have to give the victim the benefit of the doubt until it is proven otherwise. Because if they don't get the support from the police when they report it, if they don't get support from their family when they tell them, or if they tell a trusted friend, or if they don't reach out to one of those centers that offers counseling, that person will be forever lost in anger, and they will not be able to contribute to society the way they should.
Ms. Brown, go ahead, because I'm going to have a caller. I just want to prep Ms. Brown.
Oh, for the caller?
The caller.
Okay.
Ms. Brown, we have a caller who wants to engage you, right? I want to let the caller know that Ms. Brown is giving a personal testimony on what happened to her. She has a book that she has written that can help victims, right, and survivors, right, as a resource and what to do. So as we bring you into this conversation, I want to make sure that you have that in mind as Ms. Brown explains her story. Go ahead, Cora.
Good morning, Mr. Lee.
Good morning. How are you doing again?
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning to you, Jet.
Good morning.
I would like to ask one question. How old are you, Mom, if you don't mind?
Yes, I'm 55.
Okay, all right. I know you. I'm from Andrews also, South Andrews, that's why I asked. Question. The way they are trying to remove the word rape from the marital rape issue, my question is, as a victim, how would you feel if somebody called what happened to you sexual assault or something different?
Well, I sought to answer that just a couple minutes ago, that you can call it whatever you want to call it, but the fact of the matter is, it is rape. I mean, in my situation, it's rape, and you people call it sexual assault. They call it molestation when it's a child or you're dealing with family members or whatever. But the thing is, if you just look at it, if you just look at what happened, it's someone taking something from you against your will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the difference? I mean, tell me. I'm trying to figure out what is the difference. I'm not getting it. Let me just say, I'm not getting in the marital rape issue, because that's not really why I'm here. But I'm saying that if you look at what goes on in these circumstances, I don't know why you would want to say one is rape, one is sexual assault, one is molestation, one is this and one is that. The same thing happens. Someone took something against your will.
Okay, I understand. I'm trying to think mentally of how it would have made you feel had they used that word. Because I feel like if you take away the word rape, it makes it in my view, it makes it seem like it was less
heinous,
bothersome, or troublesome mm-hmm. to you, or less painful to you, or, you know what I mean, mentally. How did you feel had they called what happened to you something as other than rape? Is what I'm saying, because I don't feel like you should try use another word. That it minimize, and I guess in the public eyes, what actually really happened to you. You understand me? Because rape is rape. You can't, no matter what word you use, I think it makes it look less than if you use the word rape. That's my view.
Thank you, caller. Thank you very much. I think she's in agreement with you. And if I could sort of phrase a question from her commentary and contribution, in your personal experience, did you experience that you've come to say, I'm here to report rape, and the state actors began using euphemisms and using soft language in the reporting of what happened to you?
No, I can truly say that it didn't happen to me.
Okay.
When it was reported as it was and as it is. It
Absolutely.
Was raped.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
And it's a conversation that we have here. Partial not even on the marital rape side, but at really sort of looking at the progression of the law and whether the language being used by state actors and in the legislation itself is creating an environment where it's more likely for these crimes to happen. And right, so that's a conversation that we've been having over the last weeks. Another sort of sensitive question I'd like to ask. You said that the incident happened in your home. Were you able to return to that home? And did you have a grieving process that I've kind of lost the safe space? Did you feel a need to relocate? Were you able to relocate? And were you able to take time away from your everyday working life to begin the healing process?
Yes, when it happened, I could not return to the place for nearly 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, every time I went there, it was a reminder of what happened. And, you know, when they came and they did the investigation or whatever, and they left all of the little marks and whatever, you know. And I saw things like that. It was a constant reminder of what happened. And so you just don't feel comfortable, because don't forget, rapists take away from you everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Your sense of security, it's been shattered.
Your sense of bodily autonomy.
It's everything has been, he leaves you broken.
And so just a quick insertion. We need a business. We need a company that comes in, like, post-crime scene and cleans up, so that survivors of these types of crimes don't have to return to the scene and live in what happened to them.
Yeah, I know of what you speak of, because we see it in the States. We're not there yet. We're not quite there yet.
Right.
But yeah, it's like a constant reminder, and then you have to, you know, do it down yourself. And so it's sort of
right. Like, and that's yeah. It right there. That after experiencing this, and then after mm-hmm. going through the process, right, the judicial and police processes, to then have to come back to the scene and be responsible for cleaning up after. Yeah. Right, it's like a re-traumatization. So I want to say to young women in particular, because we often think of young women as cleaners, right, as maids and housekeepers, perhaps a business that you can support survivors of rape and sexual violence and heinous crimes by operating a business that will come in and do that post-crime and post-investigation cleanup. And sanitization of the space.
Ms. Brown, let's return back to the book, right? You mentioned that in your book, you mentioned you felt suicidal, that you felt that you was going through a nervous breakdown, that you even sought religious comfort, seek God. What does the book entail in terms of persons who are going through what you had gone through, right? And going through that transition, what does the book offer in terms of comfort or in terms of support or ideas or
resources?
What can they do?
Okay, so I wrote a chapter on forgiveness because it is the beginning of your healing process. In order for you to move forward, you have to forgive yourself, and then you have to forgive yourself for being angry, for feeling resentment, for keeping bitterness, because I had compartmentalized the hurt and the anger, and I was angry. And so you have to forgive yourself for keeping that, because I wanted to hold on to it for so long. And then you have to ask God to help you to forgive the perpetrator. Because if you do not forgive the perpetrator, you will not move on. Mm-hmm. You will not, because that is the beginning of your healing process. Because once you do not forgive yourself and the perpetrator, you will live a half of a life. You will be tied to them.
Your life will be tied to them forever.
And they will keep you. They will keep you bound. See, because forgiveness is not for them.
Mm-hmm.
I forgive him because, not because he deserves it,
But I forgave him because I deserve peace. That's why I did it. It's for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not really for him per se, even though at the end of my book, I wrote an open letter to the perpetrator, letting him know of my emotions, how I felt, how he did it to me and my son. And so, but at the end, I still let him know that he is forgiven of all he did to my son and I at that night, that he is forgiven.
Ms. Brown, men look at rape differently, right? We have issues with our loved ones being victims, right? Now, is this a book that if I'm one of my loved ones, I was going through this turmoil, right? Is this a resource I can say, hey, I don't know how to help. I need information or resource. Can I purchase this book so I can learn? Or can I transfer the book, say, hey, can you read this? Just hopefully this can help you. Does the book provide that type of help?
The book is the journey of my survival as a survivor of rape. Mm-hmm. So it tells from the beginning until I came to the forgiveness state, until I came to the ending process. And so you can, a man can pick up the book and they can learn, because they will know how to communicate with that person. Because like you said, men do not like to even deal with it. They do not like that their loved one has gone through it. And so not only men, to be fair, but a lot of persons do not know how to deal with victims of rape. They do not. And so men can pick up the book, they can read it, and they will see how to communicate. Most times, you don't really have to say anything. You just need to support. You just need to be there to support them. Because a lot of time, people speak, and they speak the wrong thing. So, you know, it's better to just say nothing at all. Support.
You mentioned support again. And I'm trying to appreciate the word support on what I can do to support. Can you give me like one or two examples?
All right. So the thing is, there are counseling agencies, right, that you can go to. And I can give you some of those agencies. Like I went to the crisis center. I went to the crisis center for a year. My son and I went to the crisis center for a year. And we did the healing, so you can go there because that offer healing for men, women, and children.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go there and get support that you need. You can also call social services. They have a support there that you can also get.
You can call David Williams and Men's International Men's Day Group. They can direct you to resources. But I want to say, I think for men, particularly like spouses and significant others, when a person you're in an adult, intimate relationship with has survived rape, sexual violence, support also looks like sitting with empathy, being empathetic, and realizing now that as a spouse, the sexual culture of our relationship now has to shift. When we may have been in a relationship where I don't need to hear a yes, but I'll stop when I hear a no, right? In terms of consent and sexual intimacy, you may have had a relationship where I don't need her to say yes for me to continue initiating intimacy. I wait for a no, a clear indication of no. But if you're the spouse or the partner of someone who has experienced rape, sexual violence, then that dynamic should change. That's what support looks like. And you understand now that you need to have clear indications of yes before you begin engaging in sexual intimacy, because your partner has been through a traumatic experience, and how she responds to arousal, how she responds to sexual initiation has changed. So support can look like taking a step back and being prepared to change the ways that we are intimate with each other and the ways that we initiate intimacy. Like where a husband would say, me and my wife, we done discussed this in the bed, 3 a.m., if I turn over, I could initiate sexual intimacy with no problem. But now that you are the spouse of a significant other of someone who has survived rape, you may realize that we're not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to do that in the night. We will only do this when she is awake and I could look in her eyes and see her response to my attempts to initiate intimacy. And that's one way that partners can support their loved ones who have experienced sexual violence. And then men being available for other men moderating how they speak about sex and sexual violence around that male, right around that male partner who's supporting their spouse or significant other that has experienced sex. Men have to create that space for other men so that those men could support their significant others.
Ms. Brown, we're going to take a short break. But before we take that break, I have a number of text asks that whether the culprit, your aggressor, was captured, if you've gone through court or anything like that.
Yes, he did.
Good.
Yes.
Good. So a number of texts was asking about that. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to return to hearing the story of Ms. Antoinette Brown, who wrote the book, Rape, A Survivor's Compelling Testimony. And you also have an event. You have an event this weekend?
Yes, it's coming on Saturday.
Okay, we'll talk about that on the next side of the break, okay? Guiding Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron Gray. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Join us on a day of giving and hope. The Guardian Media Group and Sister Cancer Support Group are teaming up for a special Dollar Day Drive. Come down to the Nassau Guardian on May 31st from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Your contributions will make a huge difference. Every dollar counts in the fight against cancer. And together, we can help support those in need. Be a part of something bigger. Be the change. Donate a dollar and change a life.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM again. This is C.A. Nuri, and I have a guest in studio, Ms. Antoinette Brown, who is a survivor. She's a survivor, and she wrote her book of her survival and her journey to her survival, right? But she's also having an event happening this Saturday.
Yes.
Right? And I want to hear more about that before we continue about your journey and your survivorship. But tell me about what's happening Saturday.
Okay. So Saturday, the 1st of June, I'm going to be launching my new book, Raped, A Survivor's Compelling Testimony. I will be launching that at the Andre Rogers Baseball Stadium. And it's going to be between the hours of 6 and 10 p.m. We will have inspiring words by Mrs. Anne Marie Davis. She will be our keynote speaker, the spouse of the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Then our guest speaker will be Dr. Sandra Dane Patterson. She will also share on her knowledge. We know her as the founder of the Crisis Center. And then I will have a review by Mrs. Loretta Butler Turner. She will also be giving a review on the book itself. And then I will respond by maybe reading a chapter or so from the book.
And so that persons there would know that you are here, and you're here because I want you to be there, and I want persons who really need the help to really come out and get their copy so that they can help others in their lives who've been traumatized.
What is the price for the book?
The price is $20.
So $20 for the book. And will you be there to sign
the book? Yes, I will be there.
I mean, to sign the book and everything like that.
Yes.
The Crisis Center has a community of women who support other women in this regard of what you're doing. Has there been a great response there when you came to them and said, hey, I wrote a book, and they say, hey, I will support you. What do you need? Has there been a great response?
I have gotten great response from women, and especially those in that community. So I am hopeful that they will come out and they will get the book, and so that their healing process can begin.
Is this book too heavy for teenagers?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not one way. It's exposed, you know, the nitty gritty of the details. I went about saying it in a way that a teenager can also pick up the book and get healing as well.
My child likens herself as a student leader, right? She speaks out. She's an advocate of her own right. And I asked whether the book is too heavy, because she's still a teenager, right? Where she wants to help other women and take action for it. And I was just trying to see if this book is appropriate for her to read, and she can add this to her activism.
It is appropriate for a five-year-old. So if you're a five-year-old, up to whatever age, it is appropriate for you. And two, I want to say that women, there are so many women or girls, and also now boys, who are out there and they are hurting. They are hurting because they are not getting help and they are not healing. And as long as they are not healed, you will hear people in society say, oh, Bahamian woman this and Bahamian woman that. You know, but you need to get to the nitty-gritty of the story. The problem is we have a lot of hurting women out there who has been raped and has never been healed. And as long as you're not healed, you will always be bitter inside. You will be angry, and you can only spew what you have. And William Bowen said it right. He said it correctly. Hurt people hurt people. And so if that's all you've got, that's all you can give. And so in order for you to give different, you have to heal. And the healing process is not tomorrow. It's not next week. It's a process that you have to go through.
Given your personal experience and your observations, you work in creating the book, the autobiographical story. Do we need to be doing much more, right? The society as a whole, the government as its entity, do we need to be doing more? Do we need to be using the word rape more to draw attention to a rape culture that exists locally?
Yes, there is a rape culture in this country. And like I said, the rape word is like a bad word. It's like a curse word. And so we need to use the word rape to bring awareness to society, to let them know that it's happening. We know it's happening, so we not need to act tabooish about it. Mm-hmm. It's happening. We hear about it, and people have become so sensitized that, you know, they would say, oh, you hear about that woman who got raped last night? Or you heard about the man who got murdered last night? It's like it becomes so normalized now.
Mm-hmm.
That if people don't, like, they don't give it a second chance to say, you know, that is a victim, you know. That is a person who's been hurt. I think the society needs to do more. They need to now begin to teach it in school, like from especially our young boys, to let them know they're supposed to care and love women, not hurt them. And so we need to teach this to them from small, from when they're young, from 5 years old. We need to teach it to students in our senior and junior and senior school to let them know, so that when they get an adult, they would know this is the way you treat women. Because some people do not get that training in their home. Children learn what they see. And so if they see something, they're probably going to act out on it. And so if you're teaching them from small that this is the way you do it, then as they become an adult, then they know better not to harm women. They know to love women. And so, yes, I think society can do more. They can put it in the schools. They can have more campaigns. They can bring awareness to it by having persons like myself who is willing to speak out, because, you know, a lot of people hear and they speak to psychiatrists. They speak to other people, but they don't speak to victims. Mm. Not enough victims come out and say, this is what happened to me. This is what I went through. And so people see, they don't see enough of people like me who would come out and say, yes, I've been there and I survived that experience. It can work.
Is there a way for people to contact you? Like an email or Facebook account, yes, or anything like that?
Yes, they can talk me via Facebook. I'm on Facebook at Antoinette Brown. And also they can send an email to MONE5768@hotmail.com.
And remind us about your event again.
And so the event is set for Saturday, the 1st of June, between the hours of 6 to 10 p.m. at the Andre Rogers Baseball Stadium, where we're going to have our keynote speaker, Mrs. Anne Marie Davis, and our guest speaker, Dr. Sandra Dean Patterson, and our reviewer, Mrs. Loretta Butler-Turner.
And remind me of the price of this book again.
The price of the book is $20, and you can get it from me at the moment. You can text 557-2110, or you can call 422-5475.
Give me those numbers one more time.
It's a text number, 557-2110 and 422-5475.
Thank you very much. That was Miss Antoinette Brown, author of Rape, a Survivor's Compelling Testimony.
And thank you for exposing yourself in the way for the benefit of others.
Thank you so much.
This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.